The opinions and information provided on tonight's show are those of the guest company solely and are not necessarily the opinions of Business Talk Radio nor Stu Taylor. We do not warrant nor guarantee the accuracy of the statements made by the guests on the show and strongly recommend that all listeners conduct their own due diligence on the companies and or seek out the advice and counsel of a financial professional. The guests on the show may pay a fee to appear on the program and are not affiliated with the show in any manner. Another week with Equity Strategies here. We're coast to coast. Great to have you with us. And as a reminder, all shows are streamed on businesstalkradio.net. Got a great show here tonight for you, and we will have coming up in our second hour for those who will be sticking around for that. That includes most of our affiliates. Ed Lucas, a graduate of Seton Hall. He's the Director of Development for Public Education at St. Joseph's, and he will be talking about the Ed Lucas Scholarship Fund that you can contribute to by going to www.shu.edu to help disabled students, of which there are 1,000 of them on the Seton Hall University. That's hour number two. Hour number one, we're going to get a lesson, no charge. It's not going to cost you anything. I mean, if you had a seminar on this, you could be paying some steep money tonight, courtesy of Howard Gutman. You will get the education right here on the airways. He is the principal of a management consulting firm specializing in building high-performance teams, executive coaching, strategic and operational alignments, and project implementation. I want to take a second to read this because his company is highly commended. His articles and commentary have appeared in many publications, Chief Executive, Financial Times, Harvard, Management Update, USA Today, U.S. News and World Report, The Washington Post. He's the author of When Goliaths Clash, Managing Executive Conflict to Build a More Dynamic Organization, and his company, GDS, Gutman Development Strategies, has been selected as one of the 20 best U.S. consulting firms in leadership development by Leadership Excellence Magazine. For those interested, you can go to his website. It's www.gutmandev.com, and Gutman has two T's. And it's great to have you with us with your new book, Great Business Teams, Cracking the Code for Standout Performance, published in hardcover by Wiley. Howard, nice to have you with us tonight.
Thanks, Stu.
So many business books out, so many. Yours is about cracking the code for standout performance, establishing leadership, making good group teams in a collective way, increase the performance level of businesses. What are the differentiating characteristics of your book from some of the others out, and why should people buy Great Business Teams?
That's a great question. The first point is that, you know, as a firm, we've been in existence for about 20 years, and our main focus has been building and sustaining high-performance teams at the top at companies like Mars, L'Oreal, Novartis, J&J, etc. So the bottom line is that when we go into these companies, if you're not able to shift the game, they'll throw you right out. I mean, that's the luck of the draw if you're playing a consulting game. So what we tried to do was create a book which really would deal on a very pragmatic, observable level around what is the DNA, the consistency around senior executive teams that really take companies to another level. And there were two things that we were looking at. One was that they were able to create sustainable business results, but the second one is that they were able to create a sustainable organizational model. And in that respect, looking at not just the business outcomes, but how the game gets played inside, that's what really is a differentiator with our book.
All right, and to do the research on the book, you interviewed, almost 40 senior executives, 25
right.
organizations. What was the common thread, if you can indeed define a common thread that you found from all of these interviews?
One of the common threads was the fact that the leaders that we spoke to all got the notion that in order to really create organizational sustainability, they have to have a company that works horizontally rather than a hierarchical hub and spoke. So most of these people were conscious. They were three-dimensional, and they understood that if you really want to have a game that's going to be long-lasting beyond simply the icon leader at the time, it's going to have to work horizontally rather than in an old hierarchical model. That was like the big consistency with all these guys. They got that.
Well, it's a competitive environment, and we're always hearing about competitive advantage and what gives companies that little bit of an edge. I, I always have to wonder when you talk to a principal of a company and you ask him about competitors, right away it's a negative when someone says, well, we don't have any competition.
Right.
To me, it seems to be a very short-sighted attitude that leads to a lot of poor performance and puts you back like Big Brown in a horse race.
You're right.
You have to continually make changes. How does a company know that it needs changes and that their performance level isn't optimal? Or do you look at it from a different perspective, saying that you can always increase the performance level and, in essence, every company needs it?
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, the question of, like, well, how do you know that? The reality is that another commonality with in terms of the book with the great business teams is, and in fact, let me answer your question by first doubling back. There were basically five key fundamental characteristics that separated the great business teams from those that weren't. One was that you had a leader who understood they needed to play a high-performance game, a horizontal organization. Two, you had us-directed players. Three, there were basic protocols and ground rules that were transparent that the organization played by. Fourth, you had a team-based performance management system, so people were getting paid for the enterprise. And the fifth one, which is just as you said, is that there was a constant expectation to raise the performance bar. So the companies we're talking about with these teams were constantly soliciting input from their customers as well as the players inside. So whether they were using like a Gallup survey to measure inside or whether they were doing their own due diligence focus groups with their customers, the reality was that every year they were getting comped on constantly moving the bar up.
Did you find in your research that a lot of companies were short-sighted in the sense they might have been consumed with focusing on one major crisis while letting all of the other things around them erode and enter into a precipitous fall, kind of like maybe a husband and a wife where there are marital problems and the focus becomes totally on the marital problems. Everything else around them collapses because too much of the effort is spent trying to resolve one problem. Guaranteed that problem is a big one.
Yeah. Well, in fact, you know, it's ironic. I was just at a company that will remain nameless, and right now they're fighting a pitched battle in one of their particular businesses. The problem, though, is that the leadership at the top is so focused on it and so reactive about it that what they're basically doing is modeling for the level below this level of freneticism and chaos. So what tends to happen then is that the people below start to disengage. So what tends to happen many times is based on how chaotic the senior executives react. The problem is that many times they don't recognize that they're as good as it gets. And if they operate dysfunctionally, Stu, the further it goes down in the organization, it gets more and more debilitating for a company. So while it's true that in some cases they may focus on like one particular battle and put all the stakes in, that's one aspect. The second is how they tend to play it. In other words, you can be very passionate and still do things in a very neutral, measured, cool level of leadership versus operating in a way that sends people a message that you're literally out of control.
And what are the defining characteristics of a leader in a company? Are they different now than they were, say, 5, 10, or 20 years ago because our basic culture has changed?
Yeah, and
technology's added to that change.
Yes, and, you know, so if you characterize, like, leaders of, like, a generation ago or beyond, or before that, you were talking more about classic hierarchical models. You had, like, the strong general patterns at the top. The reality is that it was a simpler age, and in a hierarchical model, which is built on structure, it's very clear who the VP is, who the director is, and the stuff just goes up and down the flagpoles. The big change that you ask about between today and 25 years ago, 30 years ago, is the fact that we live in a matrixed world now. It's a matrixed, multinational, global world where people have to play an influencing game of influencing people they don't have direct authority over. So the level of sophistication it requires for a leader today versus 30 years ago is dramatic. And a lot of the people, in fact, who were leaders 30 years ago would crash and burn today because they would not know how to play that influence game.
Right, and I guess a great model, and I'm sure you can come up with 1,000 comparisons, is utilizing what we see in sports and how the concept of team leadership and management has changed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you go back to the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, the managers were like the be-all and end-all. They were like gods of their empires. And the players are more like indentured servants. Now it's more of a collegial game, more of a partnering game. While the leader does make the, you know, still ultimately has the final call in terms of how to play things, the fact is it's more of a participative, collaborative game versus like my way or the highway. That's what's really gone out the window. Because if you think of it logically, if you have a sophisticated player in today's world, they're not going to follow somebody who plays a my way or the highway game, right? They're going to bolt,
right.
No matter how much you pay them.
Howard Gutman joining us. The book is Great Business Teams, Cracking the Code for Standout Performance. Available in hardcover by Wiley. How much of Drucker did you research and read before integrating perhaps a lot of what he talked about in management that you're utilizing in both your business and in your book?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, when I look back at, like, you know, guiding lights for me from graduate school on, I mean, Drucker was really one of my patron saints in management consulting. And, in fact, in the book itself, and I don't have the book in front of me, so I can't remember the exact quote right now, but I think I said something to the effect that, you know, Drucker said something where he said that for executives to believe that their decisions are the one that's really are critical, or that executives are the only one who make critical decisions, is a dangerous mistake. So he recognized that you had to play out distributive decision-making. You had to really empower the levels below. He recognized that it was going to become more of an influence game. I mean, he really was a seer 20, 30, 40 years before a lot of these things happened. So to me, you know, Drucker really was a... when you talk about like icons of the 20th century in the area of management consulting, he was the guy.
Now, let me throw in another name, a more updated one, someone who's been a guest on this show more than once, and that's former GE CEO Jack Welch, and how he talks about his differentiation model for employees working for him. Do you have any? I know you probably have a lot of comments, but come up with one or two.
Well, I mean, I also, you know, am a fan of his because essentially he plays a game of no-nonsense accountability. He doesn't suffer fools. He believes that it's more criminal, essentially, to allow someone to believe that they're doing a good job than to cut them loose or at least hold up a mirror and let them know what's going on. So he models, his model of authentic leadership, calling a spade, letting people know how they're really doing versus living into a world of illusion is also a cornerstone of what's going on in corporate America today, because the problem is that it is so competitive, people don't have the luxury to just put people in jobs where they can circumnavigate the globe. I was in the corporate world during the 80s, and at the end, and I still remember back in, you know, those days.
Let's pick it up in the 80s when we come back from
right.
a break.
That's
we'll
fine.
Take you back 20 years. This is Stu Taylor, Equity Strategies. Stu Taylor, Equity Strategies. You can go to my website, stutaylor.com. Number one, if you want to see a great website, that'll give you a lot of great ideas, and I say that with a lot of confidence. Number two, if you're interested in having your company profiled on Equity Strategies, all the information is right there. It's a great website. If you have plans for any weekend night, just cancel out and spend the night on my site. If you're interested in securing my services as a professional speaker on a variety of subjects in the area of business, you can also go on my site. I'll be more than happy to address your organization, your group, your event, your business. Everything is there, testimonials, endorsements, etc., and the website is clear, easy to contact, and also for those looking to procure any of the products and services from the many wonderful guests who have been on the show, you can also get it right on the site. And certainly one of those guests tonight is Howard Gutman of Gutman Development Strategies, his wonderful new book, Great Business Teams, Cracking the Code for Standout Performance. It's published in hardcover by Wiley. It's drawing rave reviews, and I'm impressed, and I hope you're impressed by the fact that his company, Gutman Development Strategies, has been selected as one of the 20 best U.S. consulting firms in leadership development by Leadership Excellence Magazine. His website is Gutman, with two T's, GutmanDEV.com, GutmanDEV.com. And now I feel like this is your life, Howard Gutman, as we take you back to the 1980s and where we left off.
Well, okay. Yeah, where I left off, what I was saying is that I remember back in the 80s that when people weren't cutting it, many times companies were benign and they would let them circumnavigate the globe for a year and a half. Or that was a time when outplacement was a huge consulting area, and companies would, executives would get their own offices and temporary secretaries for a year and a half. Those days are gone. They are like dead and buried, and they're never coming back again. In the world we're living in today, because it's a much more global, flat, horizontal, competitive landscape, companies have to be as good as they possibly can be. So the question of whether or not you have people who are willing to really step up and be players, it really becomes the question of what's going to make or break these companies in the long run. Because inevitably, you know, you can't maintain competitive advantage for long today.
It's also a real task for those inside to take off their CEO caps and put on their psychoanalyst caps in terms of working with groups to make them understand the importance of team performances, constructing working setups where people are able to work together, not to let their egos stand in the way, not to let their drive for advancement within the company stand in the way. How much does that factor into what you do in terms of your consulting?
Well, you're right. I mean, you know, when you talk about some of the characteristics of when you're trying to work with leaders, the leaders who really are switched on are leaders who attempt to change or redefine the leadership follower model. And so what I mean by that is these leaders are really trying to play a game where they're trying to avoid the Solomon syndrome. So as opposed to them running the game, operating like the king or the queen, they try to drill it down to their folks. Second, they feel like they're accountable to their players. In other words, they really feel like somehow they have a part to play in enabling their people to be successful. And they and the third point is they embrace feedback. They allow, they provide it, and they get it. So the model of a leader today is their EQ, their emotional intelligence, is at a much more refined level to deal with the sophisticated players in a global economy.
Years ago, I can remember the number of books that were out on the trust factor being the biggest problem in making businesses tick or move ahead. And I'm glad you mentioned the EQ, which is so important and often overlooked in a business. How is the trust factor still rank at the top in terms of priority when you look at what's most important in maintaining the infrastructure of a business?
The answer is yeah, it's way up there. But I think what's shifted, though, is that the notion of, let's say, the old psychological contract has changed a lot. So from a trust standpoint, it used to be that people felt like, if I do a good job and keep my nose clean, I'll be okay. Then it was, I could do that, and I'll probably be okay. Now it's just luck of the draw. It's Russian roulette. A lot of people get thrown out of companies, not because it's any problem with them from a performance standpoint. It's more they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. New division comes in, division gets sold off, et cetera, et cetera. So when you talk about a trust, I think it's more about the fact that a lot of people don't trust that they are will be secure and okay in a corporate setting, regardless of how they perform. That's, I think, what's really shifted the game dramatically.
Okay, we're going to continue with the game right here with Howard Gutman. The book is Great Business Teams, Cracking the Code for Standout Performance, available in hardcover through Wiley. Stay with us, and we will continue. Hour number two, by the way, coming up just around the corner for most of you, will be featuring Ed Lucas, the Director of Development for Public Education for the St. Joseph's School for the Blind, graduate of Seton Hall, and really quite an inspirational story. This is Stu Taylor with Equity Strategies. We'll be back. Great Business Teams, Cracking the Code for Standout Performance, published by John Wiley. It's by Howard Gutman, examining 25 top executive teams. And Howard, people are going to have to buy the book in order to really get all of the information here. But perhaps you can use a couple of examples from your book of companies in terms of handling some of those real challenges. You can pick out one or two. I'll let you do it. Maybe Mars, for one, might be a good example.
Yeah, Mars is a good example in the sense of, you know, Mars is an icon company, been around for, you know, 100 years. privately held, one of the biggest privately held companies in the world. And we started working with them probably about 7 or 8 years ago. And the goal was really to, from a standpoint of their competition with Nestle's, Hershey's, et cetera, to really take them to another level. So the bottom line is that it's really been an effort there of, as opposed to working in a very much like a classic high-touch leadership hub and spoke, because it was family-owned and the two brothers who owned it kind of went circumnavigating the globe, constantly touching all of the players. The new leader coming in recognized that the company was far too big to do that. So what we've really done is set it up in such a way that the leadership team now operates as this managing board. And in the end, as opposed to it being about the leader trying to circumnavigate the globe, these players divvy it up. So they play much more of an interdependent game. They, as opposed to working in separate fiefdoms, they look at what's best for the business. They make business trade-offs, trade-off talent between levels. So the net of it is that you're looking at a company that really plays very much like a horizontal game as a managing board of directors and looks at really what's best for the business, as opposed to a classic siloed organization. And that's been a dramatic change over the years, which has really been one of the reasons why they've been as successful as they have. So that would be, like, to me, like an excellent example. The other thing I was going to say as well is when you look at a lot of these companies that we profile in the book, whether it be in the pharmaceutical industry or retail, et cetera, a lot of it is about the fact that you have a leader that recognizes the need to align his senior team as a matter of course. So what I'm saying is that once or twice a year, the leader and the team go off and clarify accountabilities, protocols, ways of working. They shine a spotlight on it. So that also is like a major distinction between these teams that really are switched on. They expend energy to do it. You know, it's like somebody wanting to be an athlete, they actually exercise, they work out, versus presuming that it's just going to work out.
A couple of other elements of high-performance communication that they use.
I'm sorry. Oh, yes. What I would say is that when they deal with conflict, they depersonalize it. So they're able to not let their ego get involved. Another aspect, which is probably the most significant one, is it's about peers holding peers accountable. In fact, if you ask most people what's one of the most challenging aspects to work horizontally, that's what they would say. As opposed to it's the boss's job to hold the players and the team accountable, the players step up and do that with one another. That's and so you think about what a monkey that is, if it's just on the leader's back, to take that monkey off the leader's back, and if everyone take that level of ownership, is a real big idea.
How does size affect the business model that you're applying? Small, medium, and large-sized companies. Are there differences, and if so, what are they?
I'd say probably the most significant difference is the smaller the company, the more you have the entrepreneurial leaders who are more technically oriented, and it becomes much more difficult for a lot of those players to move into a leadership game. So in other words, when you think about what people get paid for, they get paid for their technical skills, their leadership skills, and their strategic skills. In the smaller companies where the leader may be like the chief cook and bottle washer, having been the content expert, the challenge is, as the company gets bigger, will that person who is running an organization of maybe like five people, can they then lead an organization of 500 people? Can somebody who is technically good in sales, as a good salesman, can they then become the VP of sales? That's the challenge.
All right, a lot of challenges by the book, Great Business Teams, Cracking the Code for Standout Performance. Wiley, Howard Gutman. Howard, thanks so much.
All right,
enjoyed having you.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to continue right after a break.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.